and you want it in a neighborhood that will reward you with appreciation. Use the worksheet in Figure 6.2 to project the income you will have to repay a loan. Figure 6.2, calculating the income a house will produce. Here are actual figures for a house in my town. Gross rent, $1,500 to $1,600. Using the lower end of the rent range, $1,500. Rent, $18,000 annual, $1,500 monthly. Operating expenses. Property taxes, $2,400 annual, $200 monthly. Casualty insurance, $480 annual, $40 monthly. Liability insurance, $60 annual, $5 monthly. Repairs and maintenance, $3,600 annual, $300 monthly. Total expenses, $6,540 annual, $545 monthly. Net rent available for loan payments, $11,460 annual, $955 monthly. This assumes that you will manage the property yourself. If you plan to pay a manager, plug in his fee. How much can you borrow and repay with the rent your tenants pay? Interest rates change constantly. When you buy a house for investment, try to borrow on a long-term fixed interest rate loan. Then you will be able to predict your cash flow accurately and benefit as rents increase and your loan payment stays constant. Table 6.2, found in the accompanying PDF, shows you the amount that you can afford to repay with the rent you collect at different interest rates. Use this chart as a guide when you are calculating how much you can afford to repay with the net rents that a property would generate. Then calculate the exact payment any loan would have using a financial calculator. You can buy one at any large office supply store or download an app onto your phone. Study Table 6.2 so that you become familiar with how much you can borrow to buy houses that produce certain amounts of net rent, rent after expenses. Identify the range of rents in your town and remember these numbers. Now you can make an offer knowing that the rents will cover your payments if you borrow on terms with these payments. Always borrow for the longest available term. Using the word always will cause you to struggle with this idea, and this is good. Can we agree that a loan with a lower payment is a safer loan for you to owe? If you had to lower your rents to keep your house full, the longer-term loan would give you the lowest possible payment. When you borrow to buy property, the longer-term loan allows you to borrow more money. You can buy a property with less of your cash invested. Although 30-year loans are common, as rates rise, longer-term loans may be available. When you are beginning to invest, you need to use your available cash sparingly. Buying with a low down payment is a better strategy than using much of your cash for a down payment. If your house sits empty for 2 months before you rent it, you will need cash for payments. Even with a 30-year amortization schedule, you are paying a considerable amount of principal each month. Compare the 30-year amortizing loan with an interest-only payment. See Table 6.3 in the accompanying PDF. You can pay off a loan before its due date. However, when you are still in the property acquisition mode and can use your cash to buy a house that will make you a 20% or higher annual return, why would you want to use that cash to pay off a loan that is only costing you 6%, 8%, or even 10%? After you have acquired all the properties that you want, you can shift gears and begin to pay off your debt. Owning free and clear real estate is a good strategy. When you begin, focus on buying properties with long-term financing. After you own many properties with long-term loans, you can then use your cash flow to begin reducing your debt. How long does it take to pay off a 30-year loan? About 10 minutes. You just write a check for the balance. Just because you borrow on 30-year terms does not mean that you have to wait 30 years to own your houses free and clear. Later, you will learn how to pay off your debt and get your houses free and clear in far less than 30 years. Schaub's 10-10-10 rule for buying at a profit. My 10-10-10 rule for buying a house states that when you buy, you make no more than a 10% down payment, pay no more than 10% interest, and buy at least 10% under the market. This rule of thumb will help you to put together offers to buy houses that will pay for themselves. 1. Pay no more than 10% down. A smaller down payment is better for you in several ways. First, you have more liquidity. In the event that you have to resell the house quickly, it will be easier to find a buyer who can put 10% down than one with a larger down payment. Second, you have less risk because you have less to lose. The lender has more to lose when you borrow using the property as the collateral for your loan. Third, you can buy more houses if you use your cash sparingly. When you make a smaller down payment, your rate of return on your investment increases. Suppose that you put $30,000 down and buy a house that produces $2,000 a year in cash flow, plus $4,000 a year in appreciation and principal paydown. Your profit, expressed as a ratio of the annual profit the property produces, divided by the amount of money you have invested, is $6,000 divided by $30,000, or 20%. This is your rate of return on your investment. If you bought the same house with $10,000 down, your cash flow would drop as your loan payment increased. Suppose that you had zero cash flow and the same $4,000 in appreciation and principal paydown. In this case, your rate of return would be $4,000 divided by $10,000, or 40%. By doubling the return on your investment, you cut in half the time it will take you to reach your financial goals. 2. Pay no more than 10% interest on the money you borrow to finance. House interest rates vary with time. Even when rates are low, some investors are paying more than 10% to finance property. Whatever the interest rate a bank is charging, you can borrow at a lower rate from sellers and other investors. Since interest is the largest component of your payment, the rate of interest that you pay determines in large part how much profit you will make on the house. Work hard to get the best possible interest rate when you borrow. 3. Buy at least 10% below the market. Buying at a below market price makes you a profit the day you buy. In addition, it reduces the amount of money that you have to borrow to buy the house, which increases your cash flow. It also makes the deal safer and more liquid. If you needed to sell in a hurry, you could sell to someone else at a below market price and get your down payment back and hopefully a little profit. Thus, 10-10-10 is the worst deal you should make. You should make every attempt to buy a house with a lower down payment, borrow at a lower interest rate, or buy it for less than 10% below the market. If you bought a $200,000 rental house in my town today using 10-10-10, your purchase would look like this. Market value, $200,000 to $225,000. Your purchase price, $180,000, 10% below the market. Your down payment, $18,000, 10% of $180,000. Your loan, $162,000, 30-year fixed rate at 5%. This rate will vary with the market. Your loan payment, $870. The monthly rent, $1,500. Monthly operating expenses, $545. Net operating income, $955. Less loan payment, $870. First month principal reduction on the loan is $195. Calculating the net return on your down payment. Cash flow, $85 monthly, $1,020 annual. Loan amortization, $195 monthly, $2,340 annual the first year. Total, $280 monthly, $3,360. Never use potential appreciation to talk yourself into buying a property. Buy one that gives you an acceptable return on your investment without appreciation, and then the appreciation will make a good deal even better. Your first $18,000 grows to $194,000 in a decade. If you hold this house until the house doubles in value, $400,000, and it takes 10 years, the loan balance would be $139,016. If you sell the house for $400,000, you would net, before taxes, about $260,000. If you can invest $18,000 for 10 years and receive $260,000 at the end of that time, you have earned an annual compounded rate of return of just over 30%. If it takes 15 years, your rate of return is 19.4%. If it takes 20 years, your rate of return is 14.2%. This does not include the cash flow that the property produces that we discussed above, nor does it account for tax benefits or costs. This rate of return is as high as it is because of two factors. First, the prudent use of leverage that allowed you to buy an asset worth $200,000 with an $18,000 cash investment that then would pay for itself. Second, the continuous investment of your money in a profitable asset for a long period of time. This combination of positive leverage and a long-term strategy allows investors to accumulate millions of dollars in net worth in a fraction of their lifetime. Forming your buying strategy. Before you make an offer, take the time to really know the neighborhood. Walk, don't drive, up and down the street and the streets around the house. Meet the neighbors. Notice what's going on in the neighborhood. Are there a lot of houses for sale or for rent? Are all the houses well maintained? Do you notice any empty houses? Look for other opportunities. Sometimes you will find a better deal by walking and talking to others who live in the neighborhood. Ask the neighbors if they know of anyone who is selling. You will be surprised at how much the neighbors know and how much they will tell you. Research both recent sales and properties now on the market to get a good feel for prices. Rather than trying to establish an exact price for a house you are looking at, give yourself a range of prices. For example, $200,000 to $240,000. Now you know that if you can buy at the low end of that range or below, it's a good deal. Set a minimum acceptable profit for the house. There is some risk every time you buy a house. You will invest a considerable amount of time when you buy, rent, and sell a house. Although you are not guaranteed a profit, you should buy at a price that gives you a high probability of making a profit. The more expensive the house you invest in, the larger your minimum profit should be. You take a smaller risk buying a less expensive house. It is easier to rent and easier to resell. You take a greater risk when you buy a more expensive house. You need to buy it further below the market to compensate yourself for that risk. If you had to resell it immediately, you would have to discount the price to get rid of it quickly. The difference between your minimum profit and my advice to buy a house at least 10% below the market is the result of combining a discounted price with favorable financing that allows the house to produce a profit from rents. A more expensive house will have less of its profit from rental income and more from a bargain purchase. Following are some examples of house prices and minimum profits. This is not a science. These numbers should make you consider the relationship between the risks you are taking and the price you should pay for a house. You need to adjust the discount to account for the quality and location of the house and the market for houses at the time. You may decide that there is little risk in buying a higher quality house in a strong market, especially if you can buy it with favorable financing. House value, $50,000 to $80,000. Minimum profit, $10,000. $80,000 to $120,000, $15,000 minimum profit. $120,000 to $150,000, $20,000 minimum profit. $150,000 to $180,000, $25,000 minimum profit. $180,000 to $210,000, $30,000 minimum profit. $210,000 to $240,000, $35,000 minimum profit. $240,000 to $270,000, $40,000 minimum profit. $270,000 to $300,000, $45,000 minimum profit. $300,000 plus, $50,000 minimum profit. Chapter 7. What makes some debt dangerous and how to borrow safely? I don't believe that all debt is dangerous. However, I do believe that the leading cause of going broke is borrowing money you can't pay back. Those who have gone broke, filed for bankruptcy relief, or had a foreclosure are rightfully fearful of debt. There is good debt and there is bad debt. Debt used to buy an investment that can repay that debt is valuable to a real estate investor. Debt used to support a lifestyle you cannot afford is the road to bankruptcy. Consumer debt is typically bad debt. If you can't afford to pay cash for a new car or a vacation, drive your old one until you save up to buy one you like better or have a staycation. If you have a car loan or consumer debt, make a plan to pay it off as a first step to becoming an investor. 5 reasons consumer debt will keep you poor. 1. The interest rates are high. 2. The term is short. 3. The payments are high in relation to how much you owe. 4. The interest is not deductible. 5. Whatever you bought is going down in value. You can now get a 7-year car loan that may outlast the car you buy. Contrast that with a house mortgage. The lender has a house as security for her loan, and you probably made a down payment. Therefore, your interest rate will be lower and the term long enough to allow you to rent the house and have immediate cash flow. The interest is deductible, and the loan is secured by an asset that might grow in value. A 70% loan, $160,000, on a $200,000 rental house is safer than a $10,000 credit card loan. The house, if managed well, should produce enough rental income to repay the loan. Things you buy with your credit card rarely produce any income. A credit card can be a valuable tool. Credit cards used for a business purpose are valuable. A landlord can pay his contractors, buy needed materials, and maybe even pay insurance and tax bills. As long as he pays his credit card bill when due, he can get an interest-free loan from the time he charges until he pays his bill. It's a business tool, and your business plan should include paying it on time every month. Otherwise, you will start paying interest and, even worse, deferring payments of your current expenses. This is a sign of serious danger in your business or investments. Personal credit cards can be a valuable tool as long as you have the discipline and money to pay your bill on time each month. Not paying on time is a sign of financial danger. Unintentional debt. Life is full of unexpected surprises, not all of them good. Personal debt due to an accident or health and family issues is nothing you can plan for. However, you have a few options. One might be to renegotiate for lower payments. Another might be to negotiate a discount if you can pay it off in a shorter time. If you owe a hospital, it will certainly work out a payment plan that you can afford. The hospital may also be open to discounted payments. Ask anyone you owe if they can give you a discount if you could pay them early, and then make a plan to pay them. Although this may seem out of reach today, in the future you may be able to sell an investment house and make a large enough payment to wipe out this debt. In the meantime, you could use the rental income that the house produces to begin to pay down the debt. Understanding why some real estate loans are dangerous. Not all real estate loans are created equal. In fact, some have little risk, while others are extraordinarily dangerous. These are the factors that make a loan dangerous. 1. Short term. A 5-year loan may sound safe, but 5 years is not long enough for most markets to go through a full cycle. If interest rates are higher 5 years from now, you may have a hard time refinancing or selling at a good price. Time is your friend as an investor. Plan to hold your investment properties until they double and get a loan long enough to ensure that you can hold the property that long. 10 years is the shortest loan that I recommend for a real estate investment, and longer than 10 is safer still. 2. A variable interest rate or payment. Although you may be able to get an initial lower interest rate with a variable interest rate loan, you are betting that rates will drop or stay low. A 30-year fixed-rate loan has an interest rate that has been adjusted to compensate for the risk of the longer term. If the cash flow from the house that you are buying will not make the payments on the 30-year fixed-rate loan, then you are speculating. If you get a fixed-payment 30-year loan, as you raise your rents, you get a raise. With a variable-rate loan, your payments may increase in a market where rents are dropping. Don't gamble. Invest. Finance houses that you buy with long-term fixed-rate loans. If everything goes according to your plan, you can pay them off early. If rates jump up, then you won't risk losing your houses. 3. Negative amortizing loans. These loans have payments that are less than interest only. At first look, they may seem like a great deal, since with lower than normal payments you would have more cash flow. But that's not the complete picture. As you are paying less than interest only, your loan has a growing principal balance. In addition, you may be paying a higher interest rate in return for the low payments. You could end up owing more than the house is worth. 4. Loans requiring personal guarantees. When you personally guarantee to pay a debt, the lender has all of your personal assets, not protected by law, at its disposal to satisfy your debt. Should the house you borrow against drop in value and go into foreclosure, and should the lender not recover its loan balance, the lender can take your bank account or other property that you own. Most borrowers do not realize this. In states where trust deeds and trustee sales are common, banks typically do not pursue other assets of the debtor, but they can and have. In mortgage states, lenders routinely get deficiency judgments and pursue other assets the borrower has to recover their loan plus the costs of foreclosure. If you just have one house and not many other assets, the lender will probably just write off the deficiency and not pursue you. However, if you own several houses with equity, then the lender may well go after your other houses to recover its money and costs. The next time you borrow from a bank, read the paperwork that it makes you sign to get the money. You will notice that it heavily favors the bank. If you plan to acquire a large amount of real estate equity, every loan you get from a bank will put that equity at risk if you can't make your payment on the loan. Investors with bank loans lost their property due to this cross-liability when they failed to make payments on one loan. They would lose one house, then the bank would come after another, and on until the investors' houses were all gone. You will not be able to borrow once a bank starts foreclosing on your property. Learn to finance with non-recourse loans and reduce your risk of loss during a recession. 5. Borrowing against the wrong collateral. The best collateral for a loan would be a property that is easy to sell and that can rent for more than enough to make the payments on the loan. Properties that are hard to sell are often older, need work, or are in declining neighborhoods. In addition, some houses are just strange and don't appeal to many buyers. A one-bedroom house or a five-bedroom house both have limited appeal. In our town, we have a house that looks like Noah's Ark. It is fun to look at, but hard to sell. Buy conventional-looking houses in well-maintained neighborhoods, and if you have to sell in a hurry, you will be able to command a higher price. Be sensitive to the ratio between the price of the house and the rent it will generate. Buy houses that will produce enough income to pay the expenses and repay your loan. In more expensive markets, buying on creative terms or with a larger down payment may be necessary to avoid having negative cash flow. Early in my career, I bought a number of older, less expensive houses in the path of progress. 30 years later, these houses are still in the path of progress. Because they are older and destined for demolition someday, they are a challenge to manage. When I tried to sell these properties, I found that my tenants could not afford to buy and that my only market was other investors. They could not get bank loans, so I had to sell with owner financing to get rid of the properties. Rules for borrowing safely. 1. Buy properties that produce enough rent to pay the expenses and repay the loan. 2. Buy properties that are relatively easy to manage and easy to sell. 3. Avoid personal liability on any high-risk loan. 4. Borrow with the longest term possible. You can always pay it off early. Using leverage wisely. Leverage lets you do things that are impossible without it. You can lift a very heavy object, for instance a car, with a simple jack. A 6-year-old who weighs 50 pounds can balance her 200-pound father on a properly positioned seesaw. In real estate, you can manage 50 or more houses without employees using systems that allow you to delegate, as I teach in my management course. These systems allow you to leverage your time, or you can start with $10,000 and acquire $1 million or more in property without ever borrowing from a bank. Leverage also has its ugly side. Anyone who has been upside down with a loan balance greater than the property value knows the pain of leverage gone bad. Anyone who has purchased a property with negative cash flow has paid for a lesson far more expensive than a seminar. Leverage can lead to a fortune or bankruptcy. Here is the most important thing to know about leverage. Some loans are far more dangerous than others, even if they are the same amount and have the same terms. Millions of borrowers lost their property because they borrowed from the wrong lenders, lenders who immediately sold their loans. Other investors survived and even prospered with the same amount of debt. The losers were encouraged to borrow by lenders who had no concept of the risk of borrowing. Bankers used to understand risk, and they would refuse to lend to those who probably could not repay. Today, the people making the loans are commissioned salespeople, not bankers. Before you ever borrow again, take the responsibility for making the decision to borrow. Don't let a salesperson talk you into a loan you don't need or may not be able to repay. Make the decision to borrow based on your research and knowledge of the property and the income that it will produce. Schaub's Laws of Leverage. Leverage can increase or decrease your cash flow. How can borrowing possibly increase your cash flow? Let's say that you have $100,000 to use to buy property. You can buy one house with the $100,000 that will produce $8,000 net annual income, $666 a month, or an 8% return. What if, instead of buying just one house, you decided to buy four houses, each with $25,000 down, and you were able to get four $75,000, 6%, 30-year loans? The payment on each loan would be $449.66. Call it $450 a month. Now, each of your four houses would have cash flow of $666 per month, less the $450 payment, or $216 per month. Your net spendable income would be $864, 4 times 216. That is substantially more than the $666 one house would produce. In addition, the four loans would pay down approximately $304 per month the first year, with principal payments increasing every year. Together, the income and principal paydown total $1,168 a month, compared to $666 a month if you owned one house free and clear. Negative leverage reduces your cash flow. Negative leverage occurs when a loan reduces your profit on a property. Using the same four houses mentioned above, change the interest rate to 9% and the payments to $603.47. Now, your spendable income on the four houses is only $666 minus $603, equals $63 a month, or a total of $252. This is far less than the $666 a month you could realize from one free and clear house. Of course, in an appreciating market, owning four houses will make you more money than if you were to only own one house. The amount of your payment is the key here. A higher interest rate will normally increase your payment, but a shorter term can too. These are all before tax examples. Beginning investors often pay little, if any, tax. If you happen to be in a high tax bracket, you may want to use leverage to lower your tax burden. Don't confuse negative leverage with tax shelter. You will still have more after-tax income with positive leverage. Paying more interest to pay less in taxes is faulty thinking. Would you want to pay more to your plumber next year and have bigger deductions? Of course not, and you don't want to pay more interest to your lender either. Leverage can increase or decrease your risk. Does more leverage increase your risk? Is a 90% loan more dangerous than a 70% loan? It's easy to say yes because normally the larger loan would have larger payments, thus more risk. But from a different perspective, with which loan do you have more to lose if disaster strikes and you lose the property? Obviously, the answer is the smaller loan. Lower payments give you the ability to reduce your rents in tough times and still survive, thus making your debt safer. A loan with lower payments would reduce your risk. However, if you could not make your payments, a lender would rather foreclose a 70% loan because the lender has a better chance of recovering its money instead of the house. Therefore, an investor with a loan of 90% is in a better negotiating position should he have trouble making the payments because of a downturn in the economy. Combine this idea with avoiding personal liability on a loan, and the borrower is in a much stronger negotiating position with a very small equity. How the type of collateral impacts your risk. Some properties are much easier to sell at a near retail price than others. This is liquidity, or the ability to get most or all of your money back from an investment quickly. Note that there are two important points: speed and recovering your money. Security salespeople brag that stocks and bonds have liquidity, meaning you can sell them quickly. Of course, you can sell some real estate quickly, hold an auction, but the amount that you recover will depend on what type of property you own. When banks curtail their lending, they stop lending on the hardest to sell properties first. Raw land, commercial and office buildings, and small investment properties are the first to be eliminated by the bankers. Owner-occupied single-family houses are the banker's best collateral, so buyers can often get house loans when all other loans disappear. If you are going to be stuck with a property during a recession, you don't want to be stuck with a property that cannot be financed. If you have to sell to a cash buyer during a downturn, the price you get may be a small fraction of the property's actual value. A great time to buy is a lousy time to sell. Whom you owe matters. Banks and other institutions are harder to deal with than individuals. When you deal with an individual, a seller or an investor, you are talking about their money. If someone's personal funds are at risk or if they can receive money that is owed to them sooner, they are generally very interested in talking. At a bank, you are talking with an employee who is much more interested in keeping his job than helping you, even if it is in the bank's best interest to work with you. As many builders and developers learned the hard way, if your bank goes broke, it may cause you to go broke. A builder or developer with a bank commitment to fund a project loses his ability to borrow if the bank goes broke. This generally happens during an economic downturn, so another bank loan is not available. That leaves the developer stuck with a partially finished project that has very little value. Investors who have loans with their bank would face a similar problem should their bank fail. Their loans will be acquired by another lender that will be difficult to negotiate with if the borrowers have a problem. Consider the difference if you have loans with sellers or with investors instead of a bank. The seller or investor generally wants her money back, not the property. She will renegotiate the terms of a loan to allow you to survive a downturn if you have a plan to repay her eventually. What you need in a downturn is an extension of time to pay. Markets recover eventually, so if you can negotiate an extension with your lender, you can survive and eventually repay the loan. A major advantage of owner financing. When you buy with owner financing, you can avoid personal liability for the debt. Therefore, if you cannot make the payments, you can give the property back to the seller without the fear of having the liability for the debt. This is not the case with institutional loans. If you have borrowed cash from a bank to buy a property and do not pay it back, the bank can take other assets that you have in order to satisfy your obligation. As a private lender, I have reduced interest rates and lowered payments for borrowers who owed me but could not afford to make payments. My borrowers have been able to hold on to property and survive to eventually make a profit. I made less of a profit, but by helping them survive, we both came out better. Longer repayment terms, without prepayment penalties, are always better. If you like to pay off debt, as I do, then a short-term loan with large principal payments has some appeal. I have one loan that pays down just over $400 a month. If I break even on that property, I still make $400 a month. But when? When do I benefit from that $400 a month principal reduction? The answer, when I sell. Because I have the obligation to make the same loan payment next month, I get no advantage from the $400 paydown. I won't get it back until I sell. My lender, on the other hand, gets the extra $400 each month. It makes their loan safer. It gives them a higher return on their money. That brings up the question, if it's good for the lender, is it bad for the borrower? If I plan to keep this house for a long time or forever, does it make sense to pay down $400 a month? Or would I be better off with the $400 a month in my pocket today? Your choice. $400 a month more cash flow or $400 a month saved up for you until you sell the house. Hopefully you voted for more cash in your pocket today. How can you have less principal paydown? Borrow with long-term loans from institutions and interest-only loans from investors and sellers whenever possible. Every deal is a little different. If a seller insists on some amortization and the rest of the deal is good, take it. Most investors are good at math, and if they lend you $100,000, they would rather keep their entire $100,000 invested with you and receive interest on the entire amount each month. Getting a little principal back each month that will go into a low-interest account is not wise investing. Risk tolerance decreases with age. By learning to use safe leverage, you can continue to borrow wisely at every age. Although your personal holding period has limits, it's okay to get a new 40-year loan when you are 80, as long as it's a safe loan with no personal guarantees and the payments are ones that the tenants can easily repay. Your heirs will probably inherit some real estate. If it is encumbered with safe debt, they can inherit more. Two houses with 50% loans rather than one free and clear house. As I discussed earlier, this portfolio could have more cash flow. Never sign a short-term loan without a way out. If you have bought property with owner financing, you have probably been asked to pay the loan off in a shorter time than you planned. It's not uncommon for sellers to ask for a balloon clause requiring that the note be paid in full at a certain date. This is dangerous for you as a buyer since you cannot predict what the credit market will be like in, for example, 5 years. It is reasonable and wise for you as a buyer to counter with this offer. If you are unable to refinance the property in 5 years, at a rate equal to or lower than the rate you have agreed to pay, you have the right to begin amortizing the loan for the next 5 years with payments based on the same interest rate and a 30-year amortization schedule. 10 years is generally long enough for the credit market to cycle. If you can't get a loan in 5 years, you may not be able to sell at a fair price either. Building in an extension of time makes the financing safer. Chapter 8. Borrowing without going to a bank. When I started investing in houses, I was a self-employed real estate salesman with no steady income. Not one banker in my town would loan me money to buy property. As it turned out, that was a key to my success. It forced me to learn how to buy property without going to a bank to borrow money. Many real estate investors who are millionaires today started with only a little money. Some did not have a job with a W-2 or great credit. They bought their first property with a small down payment, and then they bought another property as soon as they could. They continued to buy one property at a time. negotiating better terms and prices as they learned more. The secret to being able to buy property that will make you large profits is to learn how to borrow on terms that your tenants can repay with their monthly rent. Buying a property with little or nothing down is a great strategy as long as you can afford to make the payments. If you can't afford to make the payments, you will never collect any profits. Banks require investors who want to borrow to make a down payment, often 20%, and require good credit. They will only loan 80% of the purchase price or appraisal, whichever is lower. If you buy a house worth $200,000 for $150,000, they will only loan you 80% of the $150,000. When you find a bargain, it is often because the sellers need to sell right away. If they could wait 90 days, they would, and probably sell for more. Unfortunately, banks will not make you a new loan in a few days. Borrowing from a bank takes longer and costs more than other sources. When you borrow from a bank, you will pay high closing costs and they will charge you the current retail rate of interest. The paperwork you are required to sign will protect the bank, and if you read the fine print, you give them the right to take other assets that you own if you cannot repay the debt. If you have a good job and good credit, banks will loan you money for a few house purchases. If you buy a lot of houses, you will find that lenders often have limits to the amount and number of loans that they will make you, and eventually the banks may refuse to make you more loans. Borrowing $1 million and still sleeping well. How would you feel about owing $1 million? If you buy more than five $200,000 houses, you could easily owe $1 million. The key to sleeping well while you are in debt is knowing that you can repay the debt. When you buy rental houses, your tenants will repay your debt if you buy and finance wisely. My friend Jack Miller said that the surest way to become a millionaire with real estate is to borrow $1 million secured by property and then pay it off. Even if the property is never appreciated, you would have your $1 million. Jack is right. If you can learn how to borrow that $1 million safely so you can sleep well, then you are on your way to unlimited financial success. The safety comes from borrowing against property that generates enough income to repay the loan. Most people can't conceive the idea of borrowing that much money because they are thinking about going to the bank and qualifying for a $1 million loan. You can borrow from sources other than banks without qualifying for a loan based on your income and credit. Bankers have a lot of rules to follow. The rules are both imposed by the government and self-imposed by the banking industry. Before a banker lends you money on real estate, he will want an appraisal, a credit report, proof of your income, and a list of your other debts and assets. If you start buying property aggressively, you will soon reach the point where the rules will limit the number of loans you can have with one lender. These rules make borrowing from banks both time-consuming and agonizing. Things your banker won't do. 1. Your banker won't make a decision fast enough to loan you the money to buy a really good deal. A good deal is when a seller has decided to sell today or in the next few days, and selling quickly is more important than the price. Often the seller is out of time and needs money today or very soon, or something bad is going to happen. I have purchased several homes from sellers a day or two before their house would be sold at a foreclosure auction. Although they may have had chances to sell before, they waited until the last minute to make a decision. At that point, there were few buyers willing to take the risk of buying on such short notice and able to close in one day. Even though I have great credit and can qualify for a loan, there is not a banker in my town who can close a real estate loan the same day I call him. A home equity loan or line of credit could be used for quick purchases at bargain prices. However, these loans have variable interest rates and some are short-term loans. These terms make them dangerous loans for a long-term investor. New federal consumer protection regulations, SAFE Act and Dodd-Frank Act, lengthen the time it takes a homeowner to get a bank loan and to close a real estate purchase. Some sellers just can't wait that long. Look for sellers who can't wait and make them offers that allow them to finance either part of or all of the purchase price. 2. Your banker won't loan you more than 80% of the purchase price of an investment property. If you wait to buy a house until you save up a 20% down payment, it may take you years to buy your first house. And by then, houses will probably be more expensive, so waiting can cost you a lot. If your goal is to buy a property with a smaller down payment, then you will have to find a lender other than a bank. Some sellers will sell you a property and finance most of or all of the price. Often, they are sick, either sick of managing or sick of making payments. Look for burned-out investors who have bought several properties but never learned to manage. They will often sell to you with a low down payment and carry all the financing to get out of management. Even a small payment is more money than they can get when they rent to a tenant. Some investors try to trick bankers into lending to them by using fake contracts or phony appraisals. This is called bank fraud, and you will go to jail if you get caught. Typically, the lender does not go to jail, just the borrower who provided false statements. Beware of those who tell you to lie or use devious methods to buy or borrow. Understand that many lenders work on commission and that they are under pressure to lend money. If you are uncomfortable with what they are asking you to do, get a second opinion from another lender or an attorney. 3. Your banker won't make you a loan when prices are at their lowest. When real estate prices are going up, it's typically easier to get a loan, and bankers will make loans to investors. But when a recession comes and prices fall, banks stop making investor loans. You want to be able to buy when there is a recession. The prices are at their lowest during a down cycle. 4. Your banker won't make you a loan without regular monthly payments or with the first payment due several months from now. In fact, bankers typically insist on monthly payments starting right away. This is a problem if you are buying a house that will sit empty for a while. Sellers will often accept financing with more flexible terms and lower payments in the beginning that would allow you to have cash flow immediately. I have negotiated payments with seller financing starting in 6 months or longer after the closing date. 5. A banker won't loan money to someone who really needs it. If you need it, then you must be in trouble or almost in trouble, and bankers hate trouble. If you know you are going to need money one day, borrow before you need it. You may really need it because you are about to be temporarily unemployed or divorced or unable to pay your taxes. Whatever the reason, it will be hard to borrow once you are in trouble. Why a seller will do what your banker won't do. When a banker loans you money, he writes you a check. He is going to be very cautious and charge you a high rate of interest because he has borrowed the money he is lending to you from his depositors. He has to pay them back, so he can't take big chances with their money. When you buy a house from a seller who wants to get rid of it, the seller is not lending you money. He is waiting for his equity or profit from his house. This may be equity or profit that he will not get if he does not sell to you. A seller is not as cautious as the banker when it comes to lending money. He just needs to be comfortable that you will make his payments and eventually pay him. Consider the following actual purchase. Selling price, $200,000. Market value, $225,000 to $250,000. Seller's purchase price 20 years earlier, $60,000. Potential bank loan, 80% of purchase price, $160,000. Actual seller financing, $180,000 payable over 20 years at 4%. With this house, the seller had a large profit because he or she had owned the house for 20 years. When a seller has a large profit or large equity, he is often willing to finance the purchase and receive payments and his profit over several years. With $20,000 down, the seller has received one-third of what he paid for the property as a down payment. In addition, over the next 20 years, he will receive payments totaling $261,782, 240 payments of $1,090.76. Compared to what he originally paid, the seller has made a great investment. A banker making a $160,000 loan has no profit until you begin making payments. What looks like a risky deal to a banker with a $40,000 down payment can look very safe to the seller of a property. Borrowing on terms that your tenants can afford to repay. A wonderful feature of investing in property is that you can structure the financing on a property so that your tenants make all the payments. When you borrow on terms that have payments that your tenants can afford to make, they will buy the house for you. Sometimes this requires a combination of financing. For example, suppose that you can buy a house worth $200,000 to $220,000 for $180,000. The gross rents are $1,600 a month, and the net income after taxes, insurance, and repairs is about $1,000 a month. If you borrowed the entire $180,000, what interest rate and term would you need to have payments low enough that your tenants would repay the loan? To answer this question, you need either an amortization schedule or a financial calculator. You can get a financial calculator app on your phone if you don't want to buy the calculator. Learn how to calculate both payments for different loan amounts, terms, and interest rates, and the rate of return on your investment. Then you will be able to compare two potential investments. With a financial calculator, you can solve for one variable if you know the other three. With the preceding question in mind, what interest rate can I pay, and how much time would it take to repay the $180,000 purchase price with $1,000 a month in net income? I know the amount, $180,000, and the payment, $1,000. To find an answer to the interest rate or term, I need to plug in one of the variables. In this case, that is the loan term of 30 years. Now suppose that you have to pay 7% today for the money you need to borrow. You could solve for the term you would need. If you know that you can borrow at 7% for 30 years, then you could solve for how much you can borrow. The result is $150,307. What if you cannot borrow enough money at today's rate to buy the house and repay it with the cash flow the tenants will produce? Then you need to borrow part of the purchase price at a lower rate with lower payments or with deferred payments. Suppose that you need to borrow a total of $180,000 and you find a source that will lend you $150,000 at 6% for 30 years. A smaller loan will have a lower interest rate. After making the $899 payment, you have $102.05 a month this year because your rent should increase with time to use to pay the other $30,000. Each year, your cash flow should increase as rents increase. Here are four ways to repay $30,000 with $100 a month. 1. Pay the seller or a friendly lender such as your parents $100 a month without interest, with payments to increase as you raise the rent. 2. Pay the seller $100 a month, beginning when you can raise the rent enough to start making that payment. 3. Pay the seller $100 a month now, and agree to increase it as you increase the rents. You can take your best guess at rent increases and design a repayment schedule based on your projections. Say $100 a month for the first 5 years, $125 a month for the subsequent 5 years, and then $150 a month until it is paid in full. 4. Pay the seller the whole amount, $30,000, in one lump sum 10 years from now. This may cause you to either refinance or sell at that time unless you have saved the money to make the payment. Buying empty houses with zero-interest single-payment notes. Owners with an empty house will finance the amount of their equity with no payments for a while if you begin making the payments on their existing bank loan instead. These sellers have a big problem. They own an empty house that may cost them $1,000 or more every month. Few people have an extra $1,000 a month in their budget that they can use to make payments on an empty house. I have purchased many houses by agreeing to start making payments on an existing loan and agreeing to pay the sellers the amount of their equity, without payments or interest, when I sold their house. This could take years, but in the meantime, they don't have any more big payments to make. You may be asking how you will be able to make the big payments that the seller can't make. The answer is that you will rent the house to a tenant who will pay you enough to make the payments. Before you make an offer on any property, know how much it will rent for and what your operating expenses will be so that you know how large of a payment you can make. Suppose that a seller owns this house. Today's market value, $200,000 to $250,000. Their existing loan, $150,000. Your offer, $50,000 when you resell the house. Offer the seller a note for $50,000 with no interest and no payments until you sell the house. You can agree if the house does not sell in 10 years, you will pay the note. You agree to begin making the payment on the existing $150,000 loan. Secure the $50,000 note with a second position mortgage or deed of trust on the house. In the event that you cannot make the payments, you can deed the house back to the seller. The major benefit for the seller is that he or she gets immediate relief from both the payments and the responsibility of maintaining the house. If the seller wants to buy another house, he or she can show the new lender the agreement with you in which you took responsibility for making the payments on the first loan. You get to buy a house with nothing down that will produce enough income when rented to make the payments on the first loan. When the house appreciates enough that you can refinance it or sell it at an acceptable profit, you will have the cash to pay off the second loan to the seller. Short-term bank loans for emergencies. A line of credit is an unsecured bank loan that you can obtain based on your credit and ability to repay it. You borrow only what you need when you need it and typically pay interest only on the balance until you repay the loan. These interest-only payments are lower than payments required on an amortizing loan. The disadvantage of having lines of credit is that there may be a requirement to pay off the loan within a short period of time. Another disadvantage is that the interest rate typically is tied to the prime rate or the rate set by the big banks. This rate can change with time and your payments can increase. A home equity line of credit, often called a HELOC, is a loan that is secured by your personal home. Some lenders will allow HELOCs on investment houses. Because it is secured, there is less risk to the lender, and the interest rate is often lower than you can negotiate on an unsecured line of credit. Again, you can typically arrange to pay interest on the outstanding balance only, although the interest rate will change with time. These loans are useful for buying a house that you plan on selling for a short-term profit or selling to an investor to recover your investment and keeping half interest. They are not advisable for a house you want to hold for many years because the rates and your payments could increase dramatically. If you borrow using your home equity line at 5% and rates jump, you could soon be paying 10% interest, or twice your original payment. If you borrowed to buy a house and the rent just covered your payments, then with a higher interest rate, the rents would not cover the payments. If you cannot repay a home equity loan, you could lose your home. Use this money carefully. Only use it for emergencies, like an unexpected roof replacement, or to buy a house that you know you can sell for a short-term profit. Know that when interest rates are rising rapidly, it may be harder to sell a property quickly for profit. Why you should not refinance one house to buy another. If you are committed to buying several houses, your strategy for buying and financing them is important to your long-term success. Simply buying houses won't make you rich. New investors often assume that the best way to get the down payment for a second house is to refinance the first house. Logically, they would then refinance the second house for the down payment on the third house and continue to refinance to pull out cash for new investments. Refinancing can be a good strategy to reduce your interest costs when rates drop. If you can borrow at a lower rate and for a longer term, your payments will drop and your cash flow will increase. When you refinance and pull cash out of a property, you are increasing your debt, and if your payments increase, you are increasing your risk of losing that property. Consider the result of refinancing a house appraised at $180,000 to get the down payment to buy another one. Appraised value of house, $180,000. Percentage a bank will loan to investor, 80%. Amount of new loan, $144,000. Estimated closing cost, 3%, $4,320. Payoff on old loan, $100,000. Net cash available for down payments, $39,680. Refinancing does